Technological progress doesn't take place in a vacuum. The information that is rearranged into innovation is born from many sources, be it consumer behavior, the experiences of the innovators themselves, or the dictates of a new rule in the marketplace. It is the role of a transformational leader to understand the context in which technologically driven change takes place, and to lead their organization through the integration of that change into their everyday practices and processes. Welcome to Steps to Value, the HIMSS podcast that looks at people and processes, information and technology, as they work together to transform the delivery of healthcare. In today's episode, we discuss with the transformational leader her experiences steering an organization through our current mobile revolution. We talk with Lisa Stump, Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer at Yale New Haven Health System. Lisa is a 2017 recipient of HIMSS's Most Influential Women in Health IT Award. Today, Lisa discusses the intended and unintended consequences of technological change, how Yale New Haven has integrated mobile technologies into the delivery of care, and the role diversity plays in the creation of effective innovation. All that and more coming up.
In our mission to improve health through the best use of IT, HIMSS is committed to advancing the careers of high-performing professionals. Join us to address the gender gap in health IT with the HIMSS Women in Health IT Roundtable. Get involved through webinars, podcasts, new research, thought-provoking discussions, and special recognition of women who've made a difference sector-wide. Join at hims.org/influential-women.
Lisa Stump is Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer at Yale New Haven Health System. Lisa is also a 2017 recipient of HIMSS's Most Influential Women in Health IT Award. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Al.
So this is a podcast that focuses on the intersection of people, processes, and technology. From your perspective as a senior executive in health information and technology space, do you see an impact? And if so, what? The impact of gender disparities between those that are utilizing health information technology in care delivery and those that are developing it?
Yeah, you know, Adam, I think gender disparity is a really important issue that is facing our nation. And the impacts in healthcare are, I think, particularly poignant and of particular interest. If we consider that about three quarters of the healthcare workforce is female, and that in addition to that, women are making 80% of all of the healthcare decisions for their families in the home and for themselves, the impact of healthcare and the influence of women on healthcare is particularly profound. Yet, less than a third of hospital boards and only about 20% of hospital CEOs in the country are women. If we then shift our attention to the technology sector in healthcare in particular, in biotech and technology industries, it's less than 5% of CEOs who are women today. And this is despite the fact that published studies show that companies with more women in leadership roles actually perform better over time. And there's a convergence of factors that I think are really important. We are seeing the adoption and development of new technology and digital health applications growing, with hundreds of thousands of applications, wearable devices, and the Internet of Things generating terabytes of data on a daily basis that are available and being analyzed every day, from genomics to fitness to telehealth and more. And that convergence of technology and the digitalization in healthcare, coupled with the role that women play in planning healthcare decisions, to me creates that compelling argument around the need for more women in health IT and particularly in leadership in healthcare and in health IT. It comes down to really just good business.
So you're talking about maybe some unintended consequences coming out of the digital health transformation that the healthcare industry is currently in. Can you speak further in terms of some of the intended consequences that we'd like to highlight out of that transformation and maybe some of the unintended consequences and how we could mitigate those?
Sure. You know, I think the intended consequences start with enhancing the accessibility and communication between patients, consumers, and their care team. And with that intended consequence in mind, I think we are dedicating tremendous amount of talent, energy, and resource into developing those tools that can leverage data and information, put it in the right hands to make the right decisions, first and foremost empowering patients to have their own data in their own hands. I think some of the unintended consequences around the use of technology that we need to be very mindful of are ensuring that technology doesn't widen the gap or enhance some of the disparities in access to healthcare, where certain segments of the population or certain populations may not have access to the technology, or where language or physical or other barriers may present. We need to be ensuring that the technology is opening doors and creating bridges rather than setting up any barriers. And I think what I get really excited about is putting the technology as a piece in our tool belt that give patients and clinicians additional ways to communicate and receive care, but not in ways that prevent care from happening.
So you mentioned accessibility and communication. We're obviously in, as you know, a profound revolution from a technological standpoint with current mobile technology, as we saw in really the first wave of the IT revolution. From the perspective of Yale New Haven, where are you seeing the biggest impact coming from your utilization of mobile technologies in care delivery?
You know, I have a simple vision around the role of mobility in healthcare, and it is to allow us to deliver our world-class healthcare in the palm of your hand. And we are using the technology, as I said, to create that access. We are using everything from text communication between patients and their care team to full video chat or video visit engagement, all the way up through monitoring and caring for patients, our most acute patients in the intensive care units, and patients who present to outlying hospitals with a stroke have the benefit of care from our clinicians and our specialists by leveraging the mobile and communications technologies. I think it creates a wealth of opportunity for us not to just open communication channels, but to open education and information channels for patients and consumers as well. And my goal is to create as much of a single portal of entry or digital front door for our consumers and patients as possible. Life is complicated enough. Our health is the most precious thing that we have. And the more that we can simplify access to our own personal health information, access to general information and answers to questions that we have, and then the ability to quickly link to a skilled healthcare provider when we need to, is the vision that we hope to create and the way that we are using our tools today.
And just to delve into that a little bit more, are you seeing any similarities or differences in the way that patients and as well as providers are taking to the, you know, integrating mobile technology into their workflow experience?
You know, I think there are some generational differences, but none that really can't be overcome. I think it's our job to introduce the technology in a non-threatening way and to inform and educate, but again, make sure it's only one option in the way that we deliver care. And where the technology meets the needs of the individual patient and consumer, we want to make that the best experience that it can be. But where talking to an individual directly, whether in person or on the phone, is the right modality, we want to be sure we're offering that full spectrum of access options. It is about tailoring the experience to the individual patient's needs that we hope to create.
So hoping we could change directions a little bit and talk a little bit about you and your experience in healthcare. Can you speak to our listeners about how you first got into the health IT sector?
Sure, and it's probably an unexpected pathway. I began my career as a pharmacist in the early 1990s at a time when technology was really entering the scene in terms of pharmacy practice and healthcare. We were still transcribing and communicating primarily on paper or via phone. We were just introducing very early computerized order entry systems, just introducing automated dispensing machines. Within a few years, we were introducing robotic drug storage and barcode-enabled medication administration. And I learned a great deal through that about the potential for technology to enhance the safety and efficiency of care. I also saw the risks that needed to be mitigated, and together saw the opportunity to balance those risks with the benefits to free clinicians from manual work and get us as pharmacists more clinically engaged at the bedside with the rest of the care team and with patients. I then went on to lead implementations of things like smart pump technology and clinical decision support tools to further drive medication safety, overall patient safety, and the effectiveness of care, and then to start to leverage the data from those systems to understand the impact of the very programs and interventions that we were making. And over time, I began to see expanded opportunities to leverage electronic documentation and data, and really the critical link between workflow design and the effectiveness or lack thereof of technology and care. And with the right focus on workflow, the power that technology could bring to the care that we deliver. And over time, I started to craft a list of opportunities for us to advance the use of our electronic medical record and other tools. I proposed a variety of opportunities to our chief operating officer at the time, and through a series of relatively short conversations, we ended up creating a division of clinical informatics that I was entrusted to lead that was aimed at optimizing and expanding the use of our EMR and clinical technologies. And I remember sitting in his office, and he looked at me and said, "Lisa, this is great, and we're excited and very confident in your ability to do this, but you don't have time to be a director of pharmacy anymore." And it was one of those startling sort of career moments. Being a pharmacist was everything I had trained for up to that point, but I was still very excited and intrigued and inspired about continuing to advance the use of technology and data in our delivery of care. And then when we determined a few years later to implement Epic as a single electronic medical record and revenue cycle solution for our entire health system and the School of Medicine, I was eager then to take a lead role and was entrusted as the project director at that time. I was then able to build on those successes, continued to nurture my vision for the role of technology in healthcare, which has led me to the CIO role today.
I'm always a huge fan of those inflection point moments in people's lives where those two paths are available, what each of those paths offers. Wondering, from looking at that perspective as you were entering into a leadership position to where you are now, we talked earlier about the role that gender disparity could play from a development to user standpoint. I'm wondering what your perspective has been on the environment in general in the health IT space for women within the industry. Are there challenges that you've seen that have been overcome? Are there challenges that you see that still remain?
You know, it's an interesting question. I'm almost embarrassed to say that for years and, you know, early in my career and probably up until about 2 years ago, issues of gender disparity were not really high on my radar. I don't think I was ever actually aware that I was often the only woman at the table or in the conference room until others pointed it out to me. And I could certainly point to individual circumstances where I perhaps felt not heard or where my opinions were minimized, but I never directly correlated or really connected those as a series of issues that pointed to implicit bias or gender inequity. I often looked and said, well, I just simply must not have been articulate enough or impactful enough. I prided myself on my work and my accomplishments and preferred not to be referred to as a woman leader or a woman, you know, director. and I say that in air quotes, but really prided myself on simply being a successful leader and having led, you know, successful projects or delivered successful outcomes. And it was really only through our organization's focus on diversity broadly and gender diversity and disparity being a component of that, and through a lot of self-reflection, that I started to really understand and then become very observant and conscious of when those gender biases were entering into my own experiences or what I could observe in the interactions between others. And I've now become much more aware of both implicit bias in myself and in others. And I think that simply naming the issue, giving it space and attention, talking about it, has been a really important start to what I hope will be meaningful change on this issue. You know, I think we are developing formal networks. I'm very fortunate to be part of a national fellowship program for women leaders in healthcare called the Carol Emmett Fellowship. Our organization here at Yale New Haven Health System has a very active lean-in engagement process where women leaders are engaging with fellow women to, again, talk, give space, encourage, share best practices. We are working now to engage our male colleagues in those conversations, and I think that's a really critical step in all of this. But I think it takes that hard, objective evaluation of self, of the organization and our processes that will be the start of that meaningful change. I think for the most part, very explicit bias is very rare. If not, I can't say I've seen or experienced that very explicit bias. Implicit bias is the piece that I think we all need to be paying much more attention to and starting to drive some change.
For those organizations that maybe are not as far along in the process as Yale New Haven, do you have any words of advice? You mentioned a few areas to start. Any other advice you could offer for those organizations that are looking to delve into their own experience?
I think it starts with the conversations. I think it begins with talking with women to begin with around their experience, whether it's small focus groups or through leader rounds, to understand just the state of this in the organization. And I think in many cases, we, particularly in healthcare, we're a caring profession, series of professions by nature, but often then take for granted that we're all treating each other fairly and with respect. And I think it starts both with a top-down message that diversity in general is important and part of the core mission of the organization. And then it starts in parallel from the ground up with really talking with folks and sort of starting that conversation and giving the conversation space. And then thinking about whether it's networking opportunities, thinking about mentorship programs, I think start to follow from those initial conversations.
You bring up mentorships. That's an area we're always fascinated by in on this podcast. Can you speak a little bit to your own experience as both being mentored and mentoring others? What's some of the great advice that you've received from your mentors that has impacted your career, and how does it compare to the advice that you share with those that you mentor yourself?
Yeah, I've had the privilege of really great mentors in my career. My first mentor was a woman I worked with early in my career as a pharmacist, and I was actually the young pharmacy resident at the time, and she was a manager in our pharmacy division, and I was just starting to think about what I would do after residency and starting to look at job opportunities. And she really taught me at that point to be open-minded, to learn from every experience, to no matter what meeting, conversation, or work assignment, that there was something to be learned and to take that all in. And probably most importantly, she taught me to stretch for opportunities. So I was falling into the classic trap of thinking, well, if I don't fit 100% of the job qualifications that are listed in this recruitment flyer, I shouldn't apply
right
for the job. And she very deliberately pushed me to think about instead taking that stretch opportunity, applying for the position, taking confidence and having the ability to speak to my skills that applied. And it really gave me the first push I needed into a leadership role. And I entered into a management position right out of my residency training. And I often have thought back about those early conversations and what I learned. And it has influenced what I now advise others when I have the opportunity. And it's that advice along with that conversation I mentioned with my chief operating officer when he said I no longer had time to be a director of pharmacy. He could see the expression on my face and he said, Lisa, what do you want to do? And honestly, no one had really asked me that question before. I'd not asked myself that question. I was on a career path that I thought was the typical path for someone with my training and my experience. And it really caused me to think about not what's expected or what you're comfortable with, not that next logical step, but what really does inspire and excite you. And that's what I try to convey to folks that I mentor today. And while no job gives you only the things that inspire and excite you, striving for those will bring you in the right direction and give you the job satisfaction and the inspiration that you need that then opens up the next step in front of you that we sometimes can't see when it's two or three steps down the road. And then when you know it and when you find it, to not be afraid to ask for it and to stretch yourself for those opportunities.
Oh, what a wonderful piece of advice. Lisa, we've got time for just one more question. This is a question we ask all of our guests on Steps to Value. This is a podcast that really tries to explore the relationship between humans and technology. So for you, what's your favorite technological invention and what do you think its impact has been on our culture? It doesn't have to be in healthcare.
I do think it's the internet and mobile technology, and I know that's two things, but I link them together. And for me, it is both their impact in healthcare and broadly across the world. But the communication capability that has been created is just tremendous. You know, in fact, one of my children is studying abroad this semester, and I thought back to the many years ago, I don't want to totally date myself, when I went abroad to backpack through Europe, and I think I was able to call home maybe once a week on any given day. I don't think my parents were even sure what country I was in. To today, my ability with my son to FaceTime and have a video conversation, that connection and communication has been incredibly powerful. And we just traveled overseas to be with them for a week and spend some vacation time. At your fingertips, the information that's available about the monuments that you're visiting or the sites that you're seeing, I think is just amazing. That potential in healthcare, I think we've talked about earlier in the podcast, but in general, I think that the ability to connect across the world, I think, is incredibly powerful. Certainly got some potential downsides, the veracity of the information on the internet. We all need to take into account the security of the information, but the potential of all of that is what continues to excite me about my role in IT.
Lisa Stump is Senior Vice President, Chief Information Officer at Yale New Haven Health System, and a 2007 recipient of HIMSS's Most Influential Women in Health IT Award. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us on Steps to Value.
Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Carrie Amato, Director of Professional Development at HIMSS, where I'm responsible for developing and executing our educational offerings, and you're listening to Steps to Value.
How are you leading your organization through technological change? Send us a note as a voicemail or an email, and we'll play them on the air at the end of our next episode. You can send your comments to value@hims.org. We'd like to thank our guest, Lisa Stump, Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer at Yale New Haven Health System, for sharing her important insights on the intended and unintended impacts of new technologies on the delivery of care. For more information on today's guest and topic, please visit the Steps to Value landing page on hims.org. Steps to Value is a copyrighted production of HIMSS. HIMSS is a global voice, advisor, and thought leader of health transformation through health information and technology. with a unique breadth and depth of expertise and capabilities to improve the quality, safety, and efficiency of health, healthcare, and care outcomes. HIMSS designs and leverages key data assets, predictive models, and tools to advise global leaders, stakeholders, and influencers of best practices in health information and technology so they have the right information at the point of decision. HIMSS drives innovative forward thinking around the best uses of information and technology in support of better connected care, improved population health, and low cost of care. Steps to Value is co-produced by Rob Pahowski. Kelly Lippitt is story editor and guest relations manager. I'm Adam Baser, and we hope you join us next time on Steps to Value.